Hey, Rena, how are you? It's our second time here, I guess, for doing our On the House podcast with Riskwire. For our audience, I'm Eric Fox, Chief Economist at Veros Real Estate Solutions.
I'm Rina Agrawal, Senior Research Economist at Veros. Hope you all got a chance to check out our first podcast, where we give first-time home buyers tips on how they can find a house to buy.
Arena, it was so surreal. I listen to Spotify when I go work out at the gym. And so I listened to it on our YouTube Riskwire channel at work, and I thought, hey, this is pretty good. So when I was listening to my music, there it popped up while I was working out at the gym, and I listened to the podcast a second time on the topic you just mentioned, and I thought, hey, this is pretty good. So we're going to give it another try here today. We're on Spotify, we are on our Riskwire YouTube channel, and we are also on Apple Podcasts. You can find all of our podcasts.
Excellent. So what are we talking about today?
Well, I don't know about you, but the question I get asked a lot is, how much is my house worth? That is probably the question everybody wants to know. As you probably know, if you go to a party, when people find out that you understand housing, you understand house prices, the conversation inevitably goes to what's my house worth? And so I thought that might be fun to try to talk a little about that today. I think people, why do people care what their house is worth? Maybe they're thinking about selling. Maybe they want to refinance. And I think a lot of people, are just curious, like, wow, it's worth $100,000 more than it was a year ago. That makes me feel good. I'm not going to buy or sell, but that makes me feel good. So it makes me feel good about my investment. And clearly, if you're buying a home, that becomes very important to understand how much your offer should be. So maybe, Rena, if you could start out by talking a little bit about where would people typically turn to find out what their house is worth.
So I think I typically first, when I want to find out how much a house is worth, I go to online valuation tools. And I think most of us do that. The first thing we do is, let me check out this estimate on Zillow or Redfin's estimate or Realtor's estimate of what a home is worth. And actually, a few days back, I was checking out the value of my home, like you just said, just to find out what it is. And I found out that all three websites had different valuations. The highest one was around 5-7% higher than the second highest valuation. And that was another 5-7% higher than the lowest valuation. So I saw a significant range out there. So while these valuations do give us like a ballpark number, they are not really accurate. And that is important for somebody who wants to sell their house because you price it too low, probably you are missing out on, some $10,000-$20,000. If you price it too high, then, buyers might overlook it. They think you're pricing it too high and, let's move on to the next one. So, well, that's a good starting point, I think. But in my opinion, there are other ways to find out what your home is really worth. And do you have any
Well,
suggestions?
and I mean, I think your point is real interesting there because you talked about the first estimate was 5% higher than the second estimate. The second estimate was 5 or 7% higher than the third estimate. And if we sit back and think about that, that's 10 or 15% difference. That's not good enough.
That's not, no.
I mean, if you're looking to buy a house, for example, do you want to overpay by 10 or 15%?
Exactly.
That's too much. So we have to get something that's more reliable than that, I think.
Great.
So I think the one area that is probably a primary source when people are looking at what their house is worth is the multiple listing service. There's actually many multiple listing services in the United States. There generally speaking, based on different metropolitan areas. So there's many hundred metropolitan listing services. And when most people sell their house, they put a list price or the price they are willing to sell their house to buyers, mm-hmm. and they put it on the multiple listing service. Buyers look at it and say, hey, here's a house for $500,000. I think it looks good. I think it doesn't look good. And they decide to go look at it or not based on the listing price and the photos. I think it's really interesting when we think about listing prices. And when we look at them, one of three things will happen. One is it could be priced a little bit too high. And I know this firsthand. I have a very good friend who priced his house a little bit too high. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I've looked at some of the sales in your neighborhood and they're not selling for as much as you want. And I don't think you're going to quite get that price. And the response was, well, you know, I raised my children here. Yep. I've taken very good care of the house. I've got lots of memories here. And you know what? Buyers don't care.
No.
They don't care. It's a three bedroom, two bath, two car garage with 2,500 square feet. That's all they see. They don't see your memories.
Yes.
They don't care if you raised your children. It's callous, but they don't care. And so what happened? His house sat on the market and it didn't sell and it didn't sell and it ultimately never sold and he took it off the market. So that was one thing that happened when people saw that list price is we're not going to do it for that. Now, some realtors will argue, well, you should price it lower than market value.
Right.
And what's going to happen is a lot of buyers will be interested. Mm-hmm. A lot of buyers will come. A lot of buyers will make offers. And then there will be this competitive situation right. where they'll bid up your price to higher than the market value. Well, that's kind of a risky strategy because maybe you'll only get one buyer that weekend and they make an offer at full price. That's it. You can't really do much about that. So I generally think that's not a wise strategy to do that. And when anybody asks me what the best strategy is, I always say, if you want to sell your house, price it at market value, and no matter what the market is, it will sell.
It will sell, yeah.
Don't price it for more than the market. Don't try to test the waters. Having your house on the market really isn't a pleasant thing. You have to keep it clean all the time. People come over whenever they want to come over with 5 minutes notice. You have to leave. So having your house on the market isn't a pleasant thing. So you'll like not to do it unless you're really serious about selling your house. So I guess the comment overall, Rena, is that list price isn't necessarily, it can be, but it isn't necessarily a great predictor what your house is worth.
It can be a lot to do with sentiment also, right? That's like what you said, that homeowners, what they feel about their house. Hey, my house is the best, so you know, I'm going to price it a little bit higher. Maybe the buyer will see it. So
that's all true. And unfortunately, that's a very psychological variable. Mm-hmm. I know you and I, we're economists, where we look at the raw data, we look at the unemployment rate, we look at the inflation rate. Mm-hmm. But list price, that's one of those things that's got a little bit of a psychological component into it. And it makes it harder to use, I think. Mm-hmm. So what might be some other things that people should take a look at if they're interested in understanding how much their home is actually
worth? I think something better to look at is look at your neighborhood about homes that have recently sold. I think that gives a better picture about what your home might be worth if you're looking to sell your home, because then you realize, hey, this is the price that buyers are willing to pay for the house. And another metric you can look at is how many days homes are sitting on the market in your neighborhood. What by that I mean, you know, you list your home and how many days does it take for the house to go under contract? if you see that period is like 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, that shows it's a very active market. There are buyers out there. They'll buy your home. If it's sitting there for like a couple of months, 3 months, then, you know, hey, the market is slow. So I buy better price my house, you know, right? Don't price it too high. Otherwise, it's not going to get sold. And you can also see how many homes are there on the market. If there are several homes out there, nobody's buying them. Again, it gives a signal that it's a slow market. Mm-hmm. If there's just one or two out there, they're selling fast, you know that there is buyer demand out there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that gives you an indication, okay, even if you price it maybe a little higher, that's okay to do. So really look around your neighborhood and see what's happening out there. And a term that we use for that is comparable sales or comps. You might have
heard that.
Realtors might tell you, hey, you know, we are going to look at comps in your neighborhood to price your home. So that's what I mean by comps.
So if I were looking at houses in my neighborhood that had recently sold, and I wanted to try to look at comps, what kinds of things would I look for?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing any buyer wants to see is, what is the size of your home? By that, I mean the living area, the square footage. You know, you can't say that, oh, a 3,000 square foot home got sold for 700, so my 2,000 square foot home will get sold by the same amount. You have to adjust the price accordingly. You have to look at what is the lot size. You have to look at, you know, other features, the curb appeal, or how well you have maintained your home, etc. So comps means it's comparable.
Comparable, yeah. Yes. So that's a big point. It's comparable in terms of square footage, maybe similar number of bedrooms, similar number of bathrooms, etc. So that's important. Well, it's one thing I always think about when I think about a housing market, I moved many years ago and bought a house, and it was a very strong seller's market in the market I was moving to. And I went and looked at some houses one weekend. There were people looking everywhere over the weekend. I saw one I liked on Saturday. I put in an offer with my realtor Saturday night. On Sunday, the seller responded back and said, there's multiple offer situations, just like you were saying a minute ago, and to submit our best and final offers. So we all did. I put in my best and final offer, which was a few thousand more, and I didn't get the house.
Yep.
And my realtor said it sold for more than list price, and there were 8 people bidding on the house. And I was like number 7 out of 8. Well, I was really frustrated about that. And so I told my realtor, okay, what we're going to do for next week is we're going to start looking on Monday. We're going to, when nobody's looking for houses, everybody's out over the weekend. Then on Tuesday, we'll get our offer in, we'll get it accepted or rejected, or we'll negotiate. And by Wednesday, Thursday, we'll have the contract signed. And so that's what our strategy was. That's what my strategy was. So we looked in the same neighborhood for a house. It just came on the market, very similar price. I was the only buyer because nobody was looking on Monday evening. I put in an offer on Monday evening. They countered back on Tuesday, and we had a signed contract on Wednesday. I was the single buyer. So I looked at that, and I thought to myself, and I got it for less than list price. And I thought to myself, if I had waited till the weekend, there would have been another 8 to 10 buyers. It would have bid it up over list price, and I wouldn't have got the house, or I would have refused to pay that much. And as it turned out, I think that maybe there isn't a single market value for that house. The market value, what the seller was willing to accept for that house, was a little bit different when there was only one buyer on a Tuesday versus 7 or 8 buyers on a Saturday or Sunday. And so that is another thing, that even a sales price, a recent sales price, there's lots of other things that factor into that. If you just see the house sold for $500,000, there's a lot of things that factor into that where that can't be a very good indicator. So in that example I just gave, the house sold for $10,000 more than the list price when there were multiple offers over the weekend, mm-hmm. and a virtually identical house, virtually identical condition, virtually identical list mm-hmm. price, I got it for $10,000 less than the list price on a Monday, Tuesday. Well, that's a $20,000 difference for essentially the same house. So when you stop and think about the housing market, a housing market, a lot of people think is like the stock market, where a house has a value like a stock has a value.
Yeah.
But if you or I were buying Microsoft, mm-hmm. it sells thousands of times per second. The
yes.
price updates thousands of times per mm-hmm. second. And there is a market of large numbers of buyers, large numbers of sellers, and it's fine-tuned to mm-hmm. the nearest tenth of a cent.
Yes.
Houses aren't that way.
No.
Houses might sell once in a decade, mm-hmm. once every two decades. Mm-hmm. There might be one buyer. Mm-hmm. There might be three or four. Mm-hmm. But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a chunky market or a fuzzy market
right.
in a little way. It's not precise like the price of Microsoft, for example.
I think we saw a lot of that during the pandemic years, don't you think? Because homes were coming on the market. As soon as they would hit the market, there'd be 10 buyers.
Yes.
And I mean, and I was in that market too, looking for a home to buy. And I remember we made so many offers. And we would always go in several thousand above the asking price. The seller would come back and say, you know, these were the top six offers. We'd like you to offer your best and final offer. And in that, again, we would go up several tens of thousands of dollars. And then ultimately, we'd lose the bid because the final bidder would have given sometimes even like $150,000, $200,000
wow.
more. So it was really a crazy market. So if they put the house up for sale for $1 million and ultimately it sold for $1.3 million, then what is the actual value of the house, you know?
Right.
The seller was willing to accept $1 million, but they got 1.3, so, you know, and the buyer was willing to pay that. And in that market, you did not know what price the house would sell for. So,
you know, that was an example of a super strong seller's market that we've had recently.
Yes.
And those are very challenging to say what market value is based on the sale price. Now, do you have any instances where
sure.
you're maybe purchased a home that wasn't a typical market setting?
So in that same market setting where we were looking to buy a house, we were actually renting a house at that time. And the homeowner wanted to sell it because the market was so great. They were looking to make a, you know, huge profit. But what they did was they asked us if we would like to buy the house.
Mm.
So that way, you know, they won't have the hassle to put the house in the market, probably give it a fresh coat of paint and, you know, pay 6% commission to the realtor and, you know, all those associated
sure.
costs. And we agreed on a really great price. So they saved money. We saved money. So, but I think if our house had gone up on the market, there would definitely have been 10, 12 home buyers out there. There would have been a bidding war. And I'm sure the house would have sold for at least 10% more than what we got it for.
Mm.
So then, you know, our sale price was X. Had it gone on the market, it would have sold for X plus 10% of X. So, you know, then what is the house worth?
Well, you were very fortunate there. You
yeah.
you got a seller that just didn't want the hassles
yes.
of selling
yes.
that house.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, they're going to have to pay 6% commission.
Mm-hmm.
They're likely have to pay
mm-hmm.
3-4% in closing costs,
yes.
in repairs, in paint, and getting the house ready for the market
mm-hmm.
with selling to you. They had none of that.
Yeah.
So they were willing to discount the price by an equivalent mm-hmm. amount, hassle-free,
mm-hmm.
win-win for everybody.
Win-win, yeah.
And off you go. But yet that price that maybe was, let's just say 10% under market,
mm-hmm.
there it sits recorded with the county
yes.
recorder's office as the sale price, as the quote-unquote market value of your home.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, a challenge with data when you look at it. Not all data are created equally. And I think a lot of people, when you buy a house, you think, okay, I'm going to sign a contract. We're going to negotiate with the seller back and forth. We finally agree on a price. Hopefully there's no other buyers out there competing with me, and we sign a contract. There, we're done. We've got the final value. Unfortunately, we're only getting started.
Yes.
Which was a little bit of a surprise when I bought my first house, as I thought, I'm done. And no, it's not. You weren't done. Because one of the things that you will definitely want to do once you sign the contract is, every contract has a clause, and most buyers demand this clause, is we would like to send in a professional inspector after that to inspect the home, just to make sure things, there's no hidden things we didn't see when we walked through that would cause us to change our mind about the home. Different states have different periods of time that you have. It's generally 10 to 15 days after you sign your contract. And if you don't get the inspection by then you forfeit it. And that's not something you would want to do. But typical things that an inspection might notice, they might notice that, oh, the hot water heater is, you know, in need of repair. The roof is in need of repair. You have a 25-year roof and it's 24 years old, so you're going to have to repair your roof very soon. And sometimes a roof is expensive. It might be $25,000. And so all of a sudden, when the inspection uncovers this roof needs to be repaired within the next couple, 3 years, that's going to fall onto you, Mr. or Mrs. Buyer, to pay that $25,000. Suddenly, wait a minute, I'm not sure I want to pay what I offered. I might want to pay $25,000 less. And the seller might say, oh, no, I'm not willing to go that much. So there's another negotiation. I've seen situations in that where the seller comes down $25,000. I've seen other situations where the seller puts on the new roof for the buyer. I've seen other situations where they say, there's no leaks, there's nothing wrong with it now. I'll split the difference with you because, yes, you'll probably need a new one in a few years, but let's split the difference. But then that value goes into the final selling price. So they kind of agree on a new selling price with you based on the results of the inspection report, and that adjusts it even further. So that makes it, you know, challenging. I think you also get different buyers. I mean, one buyer might say, well, if the roof's not leaking, even though you say it needs a new roof, I'm okay with that. But I don't like that paint color. I want it, you know, to look nice. I want to see if my furniture's going to fit in here. They're more about the cosmetics. They don't care so much about the square footage and things like that. So you have to keep that in mind, that there can be big differences that occur in that negotiation after the fact, after the contract is signed, and then you sign essentially a new version of that contract with an amended sale price that's there. So what are some other things, Rena, that could impact the market value or the price of your home?
That's really interesting that, you know, this home buying process, it's not just, hey, I made my offer and got accepted. Okay, it's all done now. I just have to go through the steps. But you really have to go look at really every aspect. And like you said, it's not only the condition of the home, how well it has been maintained, what is the curb appeal, what is the paint inside the house, what does the kitchen look like, do I like it, you know, what does the backyard look like? So those definitely are factors that impact what a home is worth. But also, I mean, what impacts the value of your home is, how's the economy doing? What are the economic factors? How is the job market? What is the inflation rate? What is the mortgage rate? And coming to mortgage rate, that is one of the most dominant, one of the most important factors that impact the housing market. And we've seen that in the last few years. You know, like when the pandemic happened, mortgage rate was below 3%. It was 2.8, 2.9%. At the beginning of 2022, it was like 3.2% of some or something like that. And then towards the fourth quarter of 2022, it had jumped to more than 7%. And once mortgage rates shot up, buyer demand slowed down so much.
That's correct.
You know, suddenly it became so much more expensive to buy a house. So it really matters what is happening with the economy when there's a lot of buyer demand, if things are going slow, if the job market is slow, rates are high, inflation is high, then we see a pullback in demand. So all those factors do impact the housing market.
Oh, almost certainly. And even at a household level, those variables are felt. I gave the example a little bit ago about when I was buying a house in a very sensitive seller market,
yes,
where the first weekend I didn't get it because I was outbid. And on the second Monday, Tuesday, I did get it. Well, there were some economic variables in place there, and it was all about jobs. So the seller the first weekend didn't really care. They already had a house in Palm Springs. They were selling their house, and it was in Mission Viejo, California. They were selling their house, and they said, whenever it sells, we're fine. We don't need to go this week. We don't need to go next week. We'll go when it sells. If it's 3 months from now, if it's the summer, we'll wait, we'll go. And that's what they did. So they priced it, and they had no urgency. The seller I got the house from, that I purchased the house from the following weekend, it was December the 1st, the day I made my offer. And they had a new job starting in Washington, D.C. on January 2nd.
Okay.
They had to get out. They had to move. They knew they wanted to sell it that weekend. And along came a buyer on a Monday or Tuesday. That was like, to them, perfect, perfection. And so they wanted to close. They wanted to get the deal done. They were willing to negotiate. And they had urgency to get it done. So there again, the economic variables for the jobs, job market was very strong. They wanted to sell and they wanted to move to their new job. So that had a big impact on that.
I know. I mean, another factor that plays a lot in the housing market is season. You know, especially in the Northeast and Midwest, home buyers are not out there in droves during the winter season when it's snowing. You
and
know,
there's snow boots.
Yes, kids are in school, and you know, they don't want to go looking for homes then. So it happened with us that when we bought our home in Massachusetts, it was January, February time. We found a house, we made our offer. There were no other buyers, so it was really like a nice season to buy because I remember the previous summer we were looking at homes and it was a very hot market. You went and saw the house. If you didn't make an offer that very same day, you're not going to get the house. So, you know, if you can wait it out, perhaps, you know, go buy a house in the winter season if you're up there in the Northeast or Midwest when seasons do matter. So, again, demand, supply, right? Demand is low then, so it's kind of easier to buy that house.
Well, and I think parents with children especially, they don't want to take their, if the school district changes, they don't want to take the kids out of school in February, mid school year, move to a new school district.
Right.
They want to do that in the summer. And so there's a lot less competition from buyers in the summer as well. I suppose some buyers, if it's snowy in the Northeast, they might not want you traipsing snow across their living room, but that's certainly understandable.
So, you know, like you said, seller urgency. We bought this house in Massachusetts. The sellers had just bought their retirement home in Florida, so they wanted to sell, you know. But there can be, you know, in the last couple of years, we've seen that people have made or built a lot of equity in their homes and they've been trying to test waters, you know. I'm going to sell my house for X amount. I'll try it out. If there is a buyer out there, I'm going to sell it. If not, I'll just pull my home away, you know, like just pull my home off the market. So there are all kinds of sellers out there. So it matters, you know, how willing they are to negotiate, how urgent it is for them, because for some sellers, there are life events happening, you know. The family is growing, so they need a larger home. They're moving for a job, like you mentioned, you bought from a seller. Or, you know, there are separations happening in families. So all kinds of things. Some people are downsizing. So seller motivation, you know, that's a big factor out there.
It is a big factor. There's other factors out there, too. And I was really surprised. Early in the 1990s, I was looking at a job in the Bay Area up near San Francisco. And back then, just as now, it's one of the most expensive Yes. housing markets in the country. And so I went up there, loved the job, loved the company, loved the area. And I started looking with the realtor and I said, there is no way I can afford these houses. These are like triple the price of the house I'm currently in that I lived in Florida. And they said, oh, don't worry. Don't worry. If you accept the job, what this company is willing to do for you is they're willing to buy down your interest rate. Oh. And I said, what the heck does that mean? Mm-hmm. And they said, well, the current interest rate is 9%. And so they're willing to buy it down to 4% for the first 10 years of your mortgage. And so you will qualify on a house based on only having to pay a 4% interest rate. So you can afford a much bigger, much more expensive house.
Yes.
And I said, oh, well, and they said, all the companies in the Bay Area do this. Otherwise, they can't attract people to move here. And I thought to myself, well, that's really supporting higher prices in that market. Because if none of the companies did that, the prices would come tumbling down. So I think that's another interesting way that maybe people don't think about how house prices are pushed perhaps above market in that example, just due to what companies are willing to do to get a seller, to get them to relocate to that area to take the job, so that they can afford a home and not have to live in a small, tiny apartment as a compromise for moving to this area.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess people should talk to their new employers, you know, if the employer is willing to give them provide those kind of concessions. And just a while back when you're talking about bidding wars, you know, how far should you go in a bidding war, you think, you know? It's should you just like get that house? Should you stay in that bidding war? Or other times, you know, maybe we should step aside, because I think we should, depending on our budget. But some people keep, you know, they have to have that house.
Right.
And then it just blows their budget. And then they realize, oops, you know, I paid way too much. So I guess, you know, if you're a home buyer, you need to be vigilant about that, you know, and you're not married to that house. You don't get it, so be it. There'll be another house in the market.
There'll be another house. But they always say there's something that's called buyer's remorse.
Yes.
And what buyer's remorse is that every single buyer was willing to pay more than any other buyer for that house.
Yes.
And that's how you got that house. There were no other buyers that were willing to pay more than you.
Yes.
And so when buyers recognize that after the fact, I think there's a natural tendency to second guess and say, I paid too much. I shouldn't have paid so much. And I think a good advice for the bidding war is to simply go in with a top line amount in your head and not to exceed that. And then to walk away. One final thing I wanted to comment on is, you know, we talked about the inspection already. And so you think, okay, that's the final negotiation after we've signed the contract, after we've agreed on any price adjustments for a new roof or whatever. But the answer is there's still something else. And this, again, might be a surprise to a new buyer, but that's something called an appraisal. And an appraisal, you always have to get an appraisal if a bank is providing a mortgage on the house. And the reason is the bank wants kind of independent verification by an expert in the field. And that's what appraisers are. They're experts at valuing real estate by doing things like looking at comparable sales in the area, like you said, by looking at MLS list prices for things that are currently on the market, by looking at how many days on market typical houses take the sale, is it a hot or cold market? They estimate the value for the bank. And then they tell you what that value is. And again, it usually takes 10 to 15 days and you hear that value. So let's say you decided to pay $900,000 for the house, but maybe you got caught up in a bidding war and it bid up to way more than the market value. And the appraiser comes in and says, the comparable sales just don't support this value. It's not worth this much. Well, that's good. There's a little safety net in there for buyers, especially if you're going into a market that you're not real familiar with. Right. Like you're moving from Florida to San Francisco. That's kind of an expert in your corner to help you decide if this value is the right value. Well, what happens is if the appraiser says it's not really worth $900,000, I'm sorry, and here's why. It's really only worth $880,000. Well, let's suppose the bank said, I'm willing to give you an 80% mortgage, 80% of the value of the house. So you would have thought I get 80% of $900,000. So I could get a mortgage of $720,000. After the appraisal, the bank comes in and says, well, I'm only willing to give you 80% of $880,000, which turns out to be $704,000. So now what happens? Everybody looks at everybody and says, where's the extra $16,000 going to come from? And the buyer's agent who wants to close the deal and get their commission, everybody looks at them. Everybody looks at the seller's agent. Everybody looks at the buyer. Everybody looks at the seller. And at the end of the day, somehow, depends on who wants it the most, somebody will agree. If the seller says, okay, I will knock $16,000 off the price of the house and I will sell it to you for $16,000 less, then there's another adjustment to the price. If the buyer says, oh, I'm going to get some money from my family and that's going to pay the $16,000, that's how it would happen. Or both of the agents could say, you know what, let's take slightly less commission and we'll do it that way. So there all some of those ways impact the sale price, some don't. There again, that sale price we see has been affected by these types of things.
So when you're talking about mortgage, getting a mortgage, I think another very important factor these days is getting a home insurance. Because if you're getting a mortgage, the lender wants to ensure that your house is insured. And if you are, if you're, that house is located in an area which is prone to natural disasters like hurricanes or wildfires or flooding even, you know, and if that house doesn't get insurance, you cannot buy that house. And if the seller cannot sell that house because there is no insurance available, then they would have to really cut down the value of their home. Or sometimes insurance is available, but that insurance could be really high. So the buyer not only has to look at the mortgage payment, they have to even factor in the insurance payment. And then, again, that can break their budget. So that is a very important consideration, I think, especially if you're buying a home in one of these areas where they are prone to natural disasters. So I just wanted to add that, you know, so there's so many considerations when you're going to buy that house, right from when you make an offer to all the way till you get that mortgage.
And it's just like that, that contract price is constantly getting tweaked. There's psychological elements of buying and selling a house, unlike a stock. There's a buyer or two or three, not thousands like with the stock. And so it's a hard, it's a difficult process when people say, what is the market value of my house? So does, you know, does this, is the seller motivated? Does the seller hate to negotiate? is this the first time the buyer's buying and they're playing hardball? Or have they already lost 10 deals? And they just want a house. I just want to close. I don't care what it costs. I'm tired of shopping every weekend. So at the end of the day, I think market value has a lot of fuzz associated with it. Now, is that buzz plus or minus 20%? Probably not. It's probably not even plus or minus 10, but definitely I think we could argue based on some of the examples we've given here today, that is could be plus or minus 2.5%, plus or minus 5%. That's very reasonable variation on what we say is market value for a house at any given point in time.
Those are really interesting insights into, you know, how much your home is really worth. So I hope our viewers enjoyed this.
Yeah, I hope so as well. And we look forward to seeing you again in another couple of weeks. And again, see us on Riskwire on our YouTube web channel, also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Again, my name is Eric Fox, Chief Economist here at Verus Real Estate Solutions.
And I'm Reena Agarwal. I hope to see you next time.